Would anyone like to ask or share something? Yes, please. Okay. In practice and life, sometimes he has a reaction to sounds. And if I have some suggestions, especially with the sound of people breathing. I have a lot of experience in that department. It's interesting to weave your question with my notes for the talk, which is about listening. And mostly listening as a metaphor for practice. And including also literal listening, like listening to this conversation now. And equally, if there's interest in listening, there could be interest in what stops, what blocks listening, what gets in the way. And so I want to clarify what this Dharma talk thing is for. Because when there's that much, relatively, a lot of silence in the day, and then there's something different on the schedule, a meal or a talk, it can be cool to notice what happens. I remember always being like, oh, thank God, I don't have to keep doing whatever I was doing. I can just kind of be a consumer of entertainment. And that's not what I'm doing. I'm also not here talking for my benefit, particularly. And that's not to say that I insist that you want to have benefit from this time, or that you want to listen to me. You might not like my accent or whatever. And luckily, it doesn't matter. You don't need to like my accent or whatever. And even if you were hoping for some entertainment and you're disappointed, doesn't matter. Because what we're here right now in this room for is the possibility of some kind of happening, impulse, nudge, something like that. That's really a nonverbal thing to help us, including me, like us together, anyone, maybe not everyone, here and there. Something might land or resonate or spark, upset you, disagree or agree with you, but it could help a kind of an impulse, a leap. Dogen talks about a leap. And it doesn't happen in the verbal realm. A word might be part of a happening for a leap to where your practice helps you more. We're putting our heart into our practice. And it would be good if it's fruitful. I think. Do you agree? And what would be fruitful practice? If practice would be fruitful, what would that be like? Sweet. Sorry? Say again. To become better people. What is a better... Sorry? Yeah. Could you say more of what you experience when it's better? If you don't mind. Yes. Can you hear? No? I think a summary could be that with practice can come acceptance, for example, of anger, inner or outer anger. Is that a okay summary? To say it in short? All kinds of aversion. Et cetera. Other kinds of aversion also. And I agree, and I think acceptance is powerful, though not glamorous. Did you what do you notice when there's acceptance? What happens? Why is that better? You can say stop, leave me alone if you want. Yes, great. Thank you. Yeah. Great. Could you hear? And so with listening, when we feel listened to, there could be something like acceptance, or there could be something like a gap that we're not met just with reactivity. And when we're listening, there could be acceptance, or there could be not acceptance, but a gap. I keep my non-acceptance with me, and I leave a gap, and I leave room for the other person or the situation. And something that allows something better to happen, I agree. So instead of being like machines and doing the same thing again and again, the same input, same output, programmed, we're worried about artificial intelligence taking over, but we already have allowed artificial intelligence to take over inside. But it doesn't fit us, doesn't suit us, we don't enjoy it. Whereas even if I don't find acceptance, but I find a gap, and I can abide, I can live with that gap. I can dare to let the gap be. Then I'm surprised. I was asking you about the word better because sometimes if we bring an attitude of trying to be better And we come with a from a mental, conceptual director. We usually can't find a gap. So even if we would give up trying to be better, but feel what fits, what works better. So eventually we can be tired of our reactions. And we can feel that they don't suit us. They don't dignify us. They don't even really come from our innermost. Do you feel that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. So listening to this mind, the programmed reactive mind, if we see that we're in trouble when we believe the programmed mind, the programming, then we wish for another way. We're open to another way. It gets old being in the hall and hearing people breathing and feeling the mind going here, going there. It's not fun, I agree, when that goes on. But then if we impose on the mind, we try to control the controller. We assume we have to make it be quiet. It's a worthy experiment. You can try. In 2 or 3 years, come back with more experience. And maybe some moments that broke through where even though you failed at trying to control the controller, so it's still trusting control rather than love. Could be leaving room to discover what would allow or encourage the mind to behave differently, to behave more in alignment. So then we can have a different definition of the mind. Often, and it's fine, we talk about the mind as the programmed reactive mind. But luckily, that's not all that there is. And we can kind of harvest the nut from that part that just wants to control the control freak. The part that's right and wrong. We can harvest the nut in there, the what's important in there. We want to be free. We don't want to be in control. And again, feel free to make experiments with control and feel and watch and observe, experiment, learn what happens. It's pleasant, not pleasant, effective, kind, intelligent, or not. So if we can feel that, the nut in there, I mean, like that we care to live in a way that we won't regret. To live, actually. And even if that sounds obvious and simple, and therefore we expect it would be easy. To discover, I mean, to uncover, to discover where in us we want to live means we want to be free. Means we want to discover what freedom is. To be less under the dominance of our artificial intelligence that we've been given, trained in, educated in, and adopted. So what kind of absence or space is listening? Listening is the absence of what? It's a space of what? So what gets in the way of listening, when listening is happening, what is not there? Someone said ego, judgment. What comes before ego? What comes before judgment? Where does judgment jump out of? Bah. Reaction. And what does reaction, what makes reaction? Self. What is self? Sorry? The I, the me. What is the I, the me? When you feel the I, the me more strongly, what else do you feel? Yes. My wants. Wait, just a sec. I'll come. Anything else? Mm-hmm. My wants, dislikes, comparison. Maybe, she said. That's good. Experiential language. And where do wants, dislikes, and comparing come from? What is the basis of that? In what situation do you not compare? I'm sorry? Being threatened or not being threatened. So when we don't feel threatened, we can listen. Mm-hmm. Chogyam Trungpa talks about, like, kind of walks through the creation of a life of reactivity. A teacher. A Tibetan teacher who's no longer alive. Chogyam Trungpa, the teacher of Pema Chodron. And he walks us through as if we could walk through a process where there's vastness that's incomprehensible, unimaginable, beyond words, beyond we feel us. And so we go blank. This is in some kind of existential walk. It's vastness. If we face that, if we are open to that, something doesn't feel up for it. Amnesia. What's amnesia? Amnesia. I can speak Hebrew. And then we come back and we are separate. And therefore, not enough, therefore wanting. Therefore, what in Buddhism, they talk about Vedana, the way of knowing, the way that we come to know something. Veda, like the Vedas, is about knowing. So experience comes in through filters. And the reason the filters are there is this fundamental misunderstanding of feeling separate, though how could we be separate? Another side, when you feel less separate, when you feel more a part of, how does that go? How does that feel? What happens in your mind? What's available? Just to get the flavor of it. Okay? So when we felt like reality is too much, blank out, no, we say no. Without words, no. And then it's like we're in a bunker, probably bunker. I'm getting points with Shaka. How much can we actually see from that place? It's supposed to be a protection. But it limits our vision. And our movement. And whatever we see, seeing from there, we can't help but take it as enemy, friend, or don't have time to deal with it. Pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. And we miss most of life that way. Because most of life doesn't get registered as ally or enemy. And all that friendliness we miss when we're in the bunker. And we're taught to live there. We're taught that that's the only way to live, actually. I think. And from there, what we can kind of reach out for would be knowledge about the world from afar, from a distance, from in here. We've forgotten about knowing as or in non-separate knowing, which is the fulfilling kind of knowing. So I want to just give an example that continues with the metaphor of seeing. Nowadays, with what is it called? That thing, WikiHow. We can find out how to find our blind spot. And so maybe you have found out about your blind spot, how to find your blind spot. If you haven't and you want to, if you put your thumbs in front of you, let's say close your left eye and look at your left thumb. It has to be out in front of you, so don't hit anybody. And then let your right hand go to the right, but you're looking at your left thumb. And at some point, you won't see your right thumb because that's where the optic nerve comes out of that kind of bed of receptors of light. So that kind of fun little thing is knowledge about. And it can be helpful to help us realize we have a blind spot. Didn't even notice. And it seems that science doesn't quite yet know exactly how the eyes manage to smooth over the blind spot. But it is a great metaphor for how we go about the days that we have. We don't know how many. We don't realize we have blind spot on each side. And also, what about, there's another blind spot that you might not have heard about. People don't talk about it as much. Anybody? The one behind you. What we're turned away from. We see less than we don't see.
And also we don't see ourselves.
Right. It's like the face that everybody else thinks is us, we see very differently, that kind of blob. If we would say to ourselves, poetically, to listen with our eyes, like so to see something but in a listening way, is it different for you? It might not be. I'm not saying it should be or has to be, but could be. What's different if it's different for you? Yeah. Cool. Thank you. It's more going in, and he went like in a nice big gesture. More, we're more receptive. Anything else? Maybe not defining it. What do you mean exactly? I agree, but I want to hear more. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could you hear? No, not so much. So he's saying maybe it's less defined. And he gave the example of this table, and he made a shape with his hands like this, saying it's so it's not the concept table. It's just a whole shape. I'm adding the word whole, actually. If we would play with the possibility of poetically seeing something, but like asking the eyes to listen, to see in a listening way.
It softens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fewer details. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything else? Mm-hmm. More like feeling it. Mm-hmm. And she was down here with a kind of waving, wave motion. Yeah, okay. There was a saint called Kabir in India, in Varanasi. And we don't know much about him, but the basic story seems to be that maybe he was a Muslim weaver who had a deep calling, and the teacher that he felt connected to was Hindu and would not accept him as a student because Kabir, was not Hindu. And so Kabir got up really early in the morning because he was sure about it. And it was still dark, and he knew, he kind of was stalking his teacher a little bit. He knew the teacher's routine to go down to the river in the morning for the bath. And so he lay on the step of the ghat going down to the river so that the teacher would step on him and stumble and say, "Hey, Ram," like, "Oh, God." But he was doing his mantra. So like Gandhiji, when he was killed, he said, "Hey, Ram." But it wasn't like, "Oh, my God." It was just his vibration coming out, his mantra. And that was Kabir's initiation. He tricked his teacher across religious lines to initiate him. And that became his mantra. Hey Ram. And Kabir would weave and sing teachings. And I think that's also kind of, if you think of a shift from a talk, which could seem like it's asking you to be in your head, even if I'm trying to ask you to be in your body more. If he would be weaving, there would be a rhythm. And he's singing. And it rhymes. It could feel to us, maybe in American English, I might say hokey, silly, embarrassing, stupid, dumb. What else? Kindergarten. We have a sense that it sophistication is better for us. I don't see that happening, but we think so. What did someone say? Was there another word? Kitschy, yeah, exactly. But if we could imagine the way that rhythm and a rhyming song that's just coming up spontaneously as he's weaving, doing his craft, we might be in a different space as well. We might not be looking up and out, like when we look with our eyes. But we might be more in here and receiving. And that kind of in here and receiving has a difference from being in the bunker. What I found is being in the body receiving, letting it come, there starts to be a sense of feeling all around rather than the spotlight. And it's very useful in life. So Kabir sang, Bolen he wohabantika nana kachuna suj kahe Kabir vichar ne ke ghat ghat bani buj. And it's translated by a friend of mine who's a scholar as, it's the kind of speech no eye, like the eye that we see with, can see. Bolen. There is a speech. There's a kind of speech. But in the actual Hindi, it says, neither the eye, nor, there's a word suj, is like in the modern Hindi means like a brainstorm or a brainwave. So he's actually saying, not the brain, not the eye, neither the brain nor the eye. Kind of like none of that equipment works to receive this bolen, this speech, this vibration, this frequency, this impulse. Kahe Kabir, they bring a signature into the poem. It's like, I think it's like showing that he's in it. Kahe Kabir, he says, Kabir says, Ghata Ghata is, a ghat is a pot. Linda Hess, my friend, translate this as Kabir says, listen to the word spoken in every body. And if we go literally, ghat, ghat, so in every pot, and Kabir often talked about our body as a pot, so a space. And that there's a word that could be the weft, so part of the weaving, or kind of a wavelength, which is not so different from a weaving. So an interweaving, a wavelength, where we're less getting the particles of what is and more getting the waves of what is. And the word intelligence. An intelligent weft, weaving, waving, that's in every pot, in every body. That there is a way to receive. I haven't forgotten your question. The word in the poem is vichar, which can mean question or wonder, or inquiry, interest, curiosity. So it could be that through curiosity, we discover a space that we can feel what's more important than what we are currently tending to be occupied with. Does it make sense? Yes. I'll say it in the reverse order. We are, you may have noticed, mostly occupied with stuff that doesn't matter. We're occupied with our programming. The robots have taken over. And yet, here and there, there are also sparks of meeting and life, even though we're occupied. And there is a kind of curiosity, openness, wonder that can and does receive in a wave or a weaving way. In a wave or a weaving, kind of the frequency. So through more like a feeling or a frequency, we receive what's important about what's here. What matters and what is transformative. We receive, in fact, the vibration that is intelligent of what is. We're receptive to that offering that's going on through the help of curiosity, wonder, openness. I'll just read Linda Hess's translation again, just for fun. It's the kind of speech no eye can see. Kabir says, listen to the word spoken in every body. This is countercultural. This is counter to our belief systems. It's counter to the way that we may have received even traditions about liberation as a narrow pursuit. And we leave out the openness. So in playing around to find the kind of openness that's like listening, like that gap that allows listening, it takes courage and patience, but playing around with finding the gap, finding, even if I'm occupied, where is that occupation not extending? What is not affected? by my belief system? What is not affected by, for example, several people have mentioned a kind of belief of being a failure. Belief charged with emotion, charged with history. So we can be affected in a lot of our conscious layers by that belief, and we can feel for what isn't affected. Noticing our vedana, noticing our filters, and feeling where the filters are planted, what the filters kind of stand on, a belief of separateness. And feeling some kind of deep choosing and liking of the separateness, however much we are suffering there. We're willing to let all our resources almost go to that, even though it messes with us. So I would suggest with your practice and path to notice what helps you feel less separateness. And it won't be easy to find, because when there's less separateness, you're not going to remember it as easily. There's not the person there writing it down to show as evidence in the trial. So we can give a little energy to noticing what gets in the way of listening, what gets in the way of a space that allows the discovery of reality, and that we are in it. Already in it. We can notice how the vedana work, when the filtering is more loud, more believable. Who are the friends that help us have a little bit more question and curiosity about our filters? They're willing to say, well, that's how you're taking that. I heard it differently, or someone else might hear it differently. And it's not a lack of compassion, it's from compassion. But if we come now to this sometimes very difficult example of hearing people breathing in the meditation, and we have the long habit, the long training, many times traveled that path where that noise is a noise, not a sound. I'm not saying it's with one little flick of a finger, that whole game is over. It's a misunderstanding that happens coming on deep rest, meditation, retreat, that we think it's going to be easy. But it is more easy if we would just be telling you, obliging you to do this one thing. Like feel the breath at your nostrils or whatever. And we're saying, maybe, but probably not, feeling the breath at your nostrils, by the way. Maybe farther down, away from the head, which is overpopulated. The real estate is expensive up there. There's a lot more room, and it's a nicer place to live for many people down here. But maybe not even the body. Finding for yourself what connects. So because listening is not just leaving or finding a gap and leaving it. Right? that would be more of separation. It's an absence that's not an abandonment. Yes. Finding the gap and letting it stay is part of what listening is. But if it would be only about a gap, that would be separation. So it's either something about the quality of the gap or space or non-interference, something about the quality of that. Or there's something in addition to the space is another way to talk about it. I don't have a hard and fast idea or definition of what listening is, by the way. It's more like I know it when it's happening, I love it, and I know how to go there, and I enjoy staying there, and I love to enjoy the kind of magic, the intelligence that comes through when someone is listened to. The kind of appreciation of things that we, whether we like, dislike, or ignore when we're in listening, it's a generous sound or color, taste, smell, texture. We can get that it's not about my preference, and that in meeting whatever it is, something better than getting my preference. Something that replenishes happens. So we can bring some curiosity to what's going on in that crowded part. Calling it what it is, like often on retreat, especially in, as well as in daily life. Thinking about what we think other people are thinking of us. And just simplify the equation. That's you thinking about you. And then let's come again to the sound in the hall. We could almost say the opposite is also true. The reaction to the sound, taking it, at, like not even taking it in, it hits automatically the program. This is not a sound, this is a noise. Much before we could even name it, Vedana is faster than recognition. Does that make sense? The filter happens before we even say that we could say, recognize that snoring. The not liking of it is quicker. We already are like, and then with snoring. And that help, we can listen to that process and learn how impersonal our own so-called preferences are. Whose preferences? Do you understand what I mean? Anyone want to clarify something there? We think of it as our preferences. It's like we take the bunker as what I am. But it's actually happening beyond what I have control of. It's showing me something about the me. What seems to be me is coming together from something that's actually beyond the me. The me doesn't have control of itself. It's like an after effect of our programming. So it's not your fault that it's hard. But that doesn't mean there's not another way. So I would say sometimes when you're feeling more tired and already like ready to be irritable, you might, if it wouldn't add to that fire, meditate outside. It could be if it has become like a story that's really here, you said it's also outside of the retreat, that you go outside for some quiet and something, they start mowing the lawn next to you or something. Yes. an airplane, you said? And so he said, yes, he's smiling, sort of half smiling. You get the joke. That the invitation, the smiling invitation, is maybe there's another way. That even though that is a subject, and different people have a different sense that's more sensitive, we each have a sense that's more on. And hearing, you know, with eyes, you can close your eyes sometimes. With hearing, we haven't yet developed that, like, flap control. And even though the eyes have a way of being associated with anger, I find that the ears have a way of being associated with that kind of irritation. And sometimes like a righteous irritation. And so, do you know that word? A righteous irritation? Like, I'm right. So feeling irritation in the body. So give yourself enough ventilation that you're not feeling that you're being forced to just suffer. That's not feeding your righteousness or your, if possible, enough ventilation that, like, we just make a little bit more elastic the kind of your tie to your practice in the retreat, that you're allowed to, the teacher's saying, you can, you don't have to, but you can take the meditation hall a little bit further out, and you're in doing that. You're not out of the retreat. Just one, I need to try to complete something, and remind me if I forget. Also outside the hall, giving yourself more of what is soothing and what is like through liking, you come into a good space where you feel more easygoing. So that when the disliking happens, you're more ready to play. To feel that's like there's a fire burning and the smoke smells bad. I'm choking on it. But what's under the smoke in your inner atmosphere? What else is here? So you're going from a more narrow style, a practice that's more about not being distracted, to letting the fact that there's that you are distracted come into the game, but not just to be distracted, and not just to work that out or work on that, but to have a chance to feel what is unaffected, what's okay anyway. And also, if possible, 80-90% of your practice is not about that. Because negativity gets a hold on us more easily, we go down the drain with it more easily than with something more positive, more easy. Less of that and more of what helps the openness come around. And then it'll come around. There was someone on a retreat last August next to a snorer. And it was, she had such insights as well as such difficulties. Because the path is really about freedom. It's not about getting it right. So if the starting point is that it's not your fault that it's hard, you're not doing something wrong. And also, what if they're not either? And it is a sound of nature. And it can land in another way. It isn't. I'm not saying to pretend. It's not currently landing in another way, let's say, but it could. So it's not to pretend, but it's also not to forget why we're here. It's not just to have a nice closed system meditation to get through to the end. The bell rang. I only got distracted 50 times. Okay. Let it help you dig to find for yourself also the texture of when, okay, you're going to get stuck in it sometimes probably, or something else. And it's kind of like a, you know, those beetles or maybe you don't, but some big beetles sometimes will be walking along and then they're just, they come up against something and they just keep walking, going nowhere. So that kind of, we're doing our practice. We feel, and we are sincerely, but not skillfully, not kindly, not with the intelligence coming through. So then it's like a, sometimes literally coming out of up here, that kind of looking mode, as if we would be listening instead of looking, listening. Or instead of up here, all that, what can I feel down here? While the annoyance at the snoring is going on, what can I feel in my back, my butt, my legs, my feet? Other times I would recommend you could play with shifting the channel in a different way, like going to a deep wish or feeling you're sincerely wishing to practice. And that doesn't need to make a problem. Feeling that you are sincere, feeling that in your body is liberating. Because sincere is not something we can try to be. But you are. And we are. And to play with feeling it can help in that. Coming out of that control room kind of thing. If we had a little more time, you might get to experience when people are less tired and it's... But just the possibility, there are people who hear people breathing and it's relaxing, like, ah. It's like they're teaching me how to breathe, some people say sometimes. So thank you for staying with your path, feeling what can help. May I ask your name? Oh, wait. Okay, thank you. Okay, we're almost done, but yes, please. No? Okay. I'll just add in a couple short lines to close about listening. I think when we're listening to someone or even the birds, let's say, there's a kind of focus to the person or to the direction of the sounds, or isn't it interesting when they're all around? What is the directionality there? But the quality of listening too, like we're kind of, some kind of weaving is going to what or who we're listening to. But there's still space and a receiving. I find when it's more of a listening, if I'm seeing in a listening way, I feel receiving more of the wholeness of the leaf, let's say. And like Noemi was saying, maybe less detail and more the wholeness, or sometimes a particular detail that really communicates something nonverbally can be. And from there, from that, I find kind of, I want to say dewy, and I can't remember it. Tal? No, tal, yeah. Tal, e, dewy. kind of feeling in listening. Something that's not dry. And dew being the kind of water that seems to come out of nowhere. It's invisible and then it's visible. It comes to what's cool. So from a quality of listening to the birds or to your inner child or your inner voice, your inner wisdom, for example. And then just play with kind of throwing away the thread too. That it would be just listening. Or that it would be like listening with life. Life is also listening with you. And I'll just close with kind of a one-line story that there was a saint, modern saint actually, and a journalist interviewed her and asked about her prayer life. How do you pray? And she said, I listen. And the journalist was like, what does God say? And she said, God also listens. So we can play around with the word God if that doesn't speak to you. What might be another word there that's also true? Thank you very much.